Hey, everyone. Welcome back to Business Aspirin. I'm your host, Clint Janel, podcast where we talk about business pains and we try to see if we can help resolve them. So today I have with us Rick Vandenberg with Voda Cleaning and Restoration out of the Northeast Houston area. Rick, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing well. Absolutely. Excited to have you on and chat a little bit about this. So let's talk a little bit about Rick. You're a franchise owner. You have a couple of locations or a couple of territories for Voda. And so you are the entrepreneur that's operating that. How did you get into restoration?
Well, it's like you said, it's a franchise. I'm actually a civil engineer by trade. I've worked all over the world, but I'm actually a Dutch citizen originally and no longer a Dutch citizen. That's the flag that that flew over Congress the day we became American citizens.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, and so I'm proud American citizen now. But that set aside, I went to college in Netherlands and worked in heavy civil construction my whole life. Heavy civil contractors, so roads and bridges, heavy highway. Worked my way up into executive management. It's a $9 billion company, $15 billion company, huge publicly traded companies. About a little over a year ago, that came to an end. Because it's just, you always look over your shoulder. You're always worried that, your head's going to be chopped off. And at any given moment, that's going to happen. And sure enough, it happened. And my wife and I we've always wanted to start a business. But we're both in the same industry. We're both in the same industry. And so the only thing you can really come up with is maybe some consulting or something. You're not going to just start a heavy civil contractor.
Sure.
Yeah, with a $50 million bonding capacity from get-go. And so, what do you do? And anyway, I took some time to not just jump into a new job, but just kind of like, what do we want? What do we do? And actually started getting interested in franchising and got introduced to a few different franchises. We pretty quickly decided that I wanted to start, keep working in kind of the same contractor-like space. And something that had to do with with a lot of create new contacts on small businesses, even just homeowners and that kind of stuff. So you kind of get into the home restoration or the home services or smaller commercial services contracts or industries. And so we got introduced to Voda, and what stood out to us right away was the branding. The team is really, it was a really cool, good team. They've got a really great background. But the product of cleaning restoration was very interesting because, you start thinking about it, it's a recession-free product. Everybody is going to want their house cleaned or their carpets cleaned. But also, when something happens, it needs to be addressed. A plumber is obviously a recession proof concept. If your pipe bursts, you need to fix. Well, the pipe bursts and your house gets flooded, it needs to be fixed.
Sure.
That caught my attention. And just the way that the opportunity in the whole industry, just how far, the sky's the limit. You can go, I actually got us certified as WBE through my wife. We're partners in the business. And I just bid on our first government contract just a few weeks ago. So
nice.
you can go anywhere you want with this.
Sure.
Sky's the limit. So yeah, that's the opportunity we were looking for.
That's awesome.
Founded in restoration.
Well, I think that's perfect too from the business aspirant perspective is you have some business history and experience helping to operate a large multi-million dollar company, right? In the civil engineering side. And so you had a lot of experience. And then as you took the time to think through that, you said, okay, listen, I want to make sure that I kind of still fall into contracting, still kind of doing some stuff with my brain and my hands, vetted out multiple different things. So let's talk about that process. Let's talk about vetting out and making the decision in terms of how do I land in restoration specifically? What was the most attracting part? What was the great part about, why Voda specifically? How did you weed out to cut off owning a Chick-fil-A, for instance, or whatever your other franchise opportunities were. Let's talk about that for a minute.
Yeah, the the Chick-fil-A, you know, anything that had to do with hospitality or something, even though like my wife and I would actually like to own a bar or something like that, but we don't have the background. I guess that would be completely new. Like I said, I've got a contractor background. This is close enough to that yet to be able to use my contractor background experience, but it's also something completely new. We've had our house flooded before, so we've seen it from the owner's side, and we really remember how we felt, deflated and anxiety about your house flooding and what do we do? And then the restorers came in and they assured us and they dried us out, and it was a good feeling. We're being helped here. And so, you know, a lot of people will tell you, well, you're basically a storm chaser. You know, I mean, you're in Houston, Texas. I mean, even though storms are obviously a source of revenue, unfortunately, but you're not a storm chaser. You're here to help people. And so that's a part that we're really also, I was really looking for, was trying to get it more into a personal and relationship-based business. Because in heavy civil, it's low bid. So it doesn't matter if you hate each other or like each other or whatever. If my next bid on the contract is low bid, I'll get the contract. It doesn't matter how much the owner hates me or I hate the subcontractor. It's, you know,
it's
so
low bid.
Yeah, it's and so that whole industry is not built on relationships, and that started feeling, you know, shallow and empty and
sure,
so,
okay,
yeah, and so I mean, just in the short time that we've really worked on this, I've just built so many new relationships, friendships, and it's a whole different ballgame.
Sure it is. Absolutely.
Really cool.
Well, let's talk about challenges that you faced then. The challenge of transitioning from what you did to having to build relationships to having to learn how to be an entrepreneur and operate a business. What kind of challenges have you run into along the way?
So the obvious challenge of, you know, you got to keep the lights on, and it's now not just like show up at work and you get an off day, you can get away with it. The off days are impacting my business. So a big challenge is sales. I mean, I'm a natural connector with people. I don't mind getting to go to Chamber of Commerce events or BNI events or other networking events and talking to everybody in the room and exchanging cards and learning everything about their personal life and creating the network that way. The sales part of it, walking into a business, introducing myself and selling the product, is foreign and new to me. So that's a challenge I need to, because I get caught up in the weeds with running the business and with all the aspects around that. Like you said, I've got plenty of business experience to understand financials and investments and all that stuff. So SOPs, we create all sorts of, we've sometimes run this business as a larger business than it is. We've built an intranet and all the good stuff, but that is all good and well, but that doesn't sell the product.
Sure. But now you find yourself in a position where you're having to navigate, okay, I've got to do the sales. I got to do the operation. I may have to go clean. I got to coordinate my crews. I've got to sling fans. I got to maintain vehicles, all the things that are involved. And that's one of the challenges that are difficult to navigate, because you're absolutely right. And we experienced that, you know, some level on our end, which was you got to go do the work and then you got to keep the pipeline full. And how do I do both of those things well? And especially the cleaning side of your business is pretty consistent, I would think. You go land a contract, you clean a commercial structure, I'm assuming. You know, regularly you do some carpet cleanings separately too. And the restoration is the cyclical side of it, correct?
Yeah, totally. I mean, so the way that we built it up is we start with lead generating systems, Thumbtack, Angie, Google, obviously. And so the started up as mostly residential cleaning. So smaller jobs, you know, there's a lot of competition in that. And there's a lot of people that are way cheaper than we are but we've got products that are top of the line and equipment. And so we definitely are good in that. And so it's kind of a steady stream. And from there on, we went into commercial cleaning. So we've done offices, banks. We're going to do a massive church in Livingston next month. And so that's the cleaning part of it. And obviously, the commercial side of things is more interesting than the small residential jobs. You know, you're looking at a certain amount of money, revenue for in a certain day. And when it comes to residential, that might be three jobs. Where you drive around, you got logistics, because that's another thing. I mean, we've got a huge territory. And if we have a job in Crockett and in Channelview, we're 3 hours apart. You know?
Yeah. So,
but then getting into the restoration, That's also obviously very competitive, as you know, and especially when it's a quote unquote dry time, like it is, even though despite the rains right now in Houston, it's just not been, there's not been a lot of jobs around. And I work with plenty of lead generating companies that understand the market.
Right.
And I'm like, and you know, why aren't I getting calls as well? It's because nobody is. And so that's when you have the cleaning side. Now, what we have been working on really, really hard is to get the brand out there, to get the people to know us, that when the storm does hit, that we're not just, that we're trustworthy, that people know that we're trustworthy, that we're not just opportunistic. And
so let's talk about that then. I mean, sales is a tough part of any cleaning service industry, restoration industry business.
Yeah.
And some of it is not contingent upon anything you do, you know, act of God or plumbing failure or something that creates the loss on the restoration side. So you mentioned getting out and getting your name known. What steps are you taking right now to create brand awareness and create growth and marketing?
So first we did a lot of home and garden shows, and you know, we got a big tent. We have an old Expedition, Ford Expedition. It's a 2011. It's got 200,000 miles on it. Had a raft. And just drive around with that, right? That's the brand out there, and it works because you run to people and they're like, "I've seen your vehicles, I've seen your vans." Startup, you have one van, so we don't have vans. We've got one van. You know?
Yeah.
So that's the beginning, and then you know, groups like Chamber of Commerce and they've got a bunch of get-togethers and just talk to people. I mean, I wear my brand everywhere I go. I hang out. Cards, talk about the brand to everybody I can, and that's getting the name out there. And then when people do know you or know of you, if somebody says, you know, "Man, I got a burst pipe," and this other guy says, "Well, I got a card here, Rick Vandenberg with Voda, and I've heard about those people," and it's just all about referral, personal references at that point. And word of mouth is I think probably one of the strongest things. Personal endorsements is probably the strongest.
Sure, they are. Sure, there. A warm lead into someone's great. So then, tell me, what do you think has been the best marketing action you've taken? Whether it's a Chamber of Commerce or having the vehicle wrapped, or what action have you taken that you think is yielding you the best results?
Well, that's kind of the question: is what's results, right? If you took a look at straight return on investment, as in money spent and time and effort spent. For me personally, the Chamber has been really strong. You know, you become a member for a certain amount of money, but that's not it, right? You get your name and directory, and then you start showing up and start talking to people. And next thing I know, I'm landing a 1,000 square foot office job because somebody's got an office and needs their carpet and towel cleaned. And well, I mean, Rick seemed like a good guy. Let's get a price from him, and you know, in the bank, and so you get that kind of stuff. And it's funny because you think that people, you know, try with their own home first, you know, a little smaller or whatever. But no, it's big right away. You go into the offices. Another really cool thing out of the Chamber was that we had a local city councilman that was looking to get their carpets and their house cleaned. So what does he do? He calls the president of the Chamber of Commerce. And the president said, "Well, we got a new member. He's been very active. It seems really good." And so we ended up in the city councilman's house cleaning their
perfect.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So from your perspective, like, the Chamber is kind of the primary driver of the relationships you're building. So you would recommend any entrepreneur that's trying to jump into something, get active in a Chamber, a BNI, a Rotary group, something, right?
Yeah, exactly. Get active is the key.
Sure.
You can become a member anywhere.
Sure.
Just, you know, depending on a mention in a directory is not going to help you.
Keep going.
Yeah, because I mean, I'm sure there's other restoration and cleaning services in my Chamber of Commerce. Nobody knows about them because they don't show up.
Because they're not going there. They're not active in that, for sure.
So that's huge. And then BNI, like you said, is a strong, it's something that really need to kind of adapt to, like understand what's going on here. It's totally different. And that might, for some people, it is a very long-term thing. I've met somebody this morning that's been at San Bianco for 11 years. I don't know if I'll be there in 11 years, but it's definitely a good way to get started.
Sure. Sure. So let's talk about managing that and operations, especially in a catastrophe-related business, because how many staff do you guys have, Rick?
So we've got two. So we've got operation manager and lead tech. And then we also recently hired an admin and dispatch person. And that was just the reason for that is a whole different story. But we had a call center and it was just a mess and closing rates were low. And she, the person we hired, is actually the wife of our operations manager. So that works out because they're, you know, she can bounce off questions of her husband.
And they kind of work the same schedule and hours that way a lot of times too.
And I keep busy with business development, marketing, networking, sales, and the running the business side of the business. I have gone out to jobs, but that's not what I normally do. That's not really. Also, the franchises was funny because one of the first questions is, do you have any history in carpet cleaning or restoration? No, I don't. You know, you kind of feel like you're not. It doesn't make sense.
And I spilled some drink on my carpet one time and scrubbed it up with a paper towel. Does that count?
We get that stuff. It's called grandma's elixir or something, and it works really well, red wine. And but so I said no, and they're like, okay, great. I'm like, great? What do you mean great? And so what they were looking for was business professionals with good experience that had no relation to the industry.
We can teach you the technical side, right? Yeah. It's harder to teach business operations side and entrepreneurship.
Exactly. And they want you to basically hire somebody right away that with experience. And so that person is the experience. And that way I get to focus on the growing the business. So that's the interesting part. But yeah, it's definitely a fire hose. You know, I mean, I learned I did all the certifications right off the bat, and, you know, just to understand what the industry is about. So I've got all the certifications. I know how to work with the equipment, so I can go into a house and do it. I'm not experienced as the guys that work for me.
Yeah, I mean, you're less efficient. It costs you more to do that than it is for you to go develop business. But it's still, there's a juggle, right? Like initially, you got to kind of figure that out and make all that work.
Exactly. And when the disaster does strike, and that's where owning a franchise gets really valuable. Like a lot of calls, a lot of coaching calls, group calls. So yesterday we were on a call and it was geared towards the owners that are in hurricane areas, Florida, Texas. And so it's like when that happens, you as an owner are going to be 24/7, you know, working with your crews. I mean, that's just the way it is. You're not going to sit back. That's not why you're an owner of this one of these franchises. And it's true. I mean, my 15-year-old, my wife, she can't go to work because, like, we went through Harvey, so it was a disaster. You couldn't go to work for 2 weeks, and she'll be out there for even travel out. I mean,
yeah, sure.
And but then what they tell you is that you don't forget that you still have a business trunk. You still run payroll. You still need to get a bookkeeper what they need, and on top of that, there's going to be areas that aren't affected, and those people still want their carpets clean. So you can't say, too busy, sorry.
I can't abandon my normal daily business work
exactly
for these other things. It's tough. It's a tough thing to manage for sure.
Yeah. And because we haven't gone through that through a year cycle. And so I love that they start preparing you for that mindset at least. You know, I mean, it's going to be chaos.
Sure. It gets hectic. It gets crazy. It's difficult to navigate for sure. But you know, if you have processes in place and you have systems to kind of help you navigate that, then you're better equipped to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be scary if our first week was a hurricane or something like that, or a big freeze.
Yeah, sure. What's work-life balance like for you right now, Rick?
So that's interesting because I actually had this conversation with somebody not too long ago. Work-life balance when you're in corporate America is pretty clear. You're at work or you're at home. And then, of course, you pick up the phone if it rings, or you might be working on a report at night. But in general, that's pretty clear. This work is now life, basically. And I think if you want to have your own business work out, that's how it's supposed to be. There's never going to be, I'm not working. You're having fun. I mean, even last night we went to a business, to a chamber event, and it was called Fun After Five. So, I mean, there's, you know, drink some beers and you're still working. And then my wife and I mean, even though she's maintaining her full-time job still, you know, we're partners in the business and we're basically always talking about work. And that's what you want to be willing to do, right? We have good times. We still whatever, but it's long days and long. And if something, if I get an email or a call, or, you know, we have a call tree set up for leads, right? I'm always on the call tree. So if my phone rings and it's the call tree, no matter what I'm doing, now I don't have my phone. My wife has my phone because we're doing this. But that's kind of like how you have to think.
Yeah. I've got to be responsible for making sure that work comes in. Exactly. So I have to answer the phone when work is coming in, because yeah, in this world, especially the restoration side, maybe the carpet cleaning, not so much, but you don't want to miss on that 6,000 square foot building to clean carpet either, right?
No.
Or a massive church or whatever it is that you're looking at. You want to get those opportunities. And sometimes they...
No, you're absolutely right. Because ironically, that church came through Thumbtack or Angie, like of all, you know, places. You'd think that, you know, if you go through one of those, it's people, oh man, I should have this room cleaned, you know, one room. But then all of a sudden, a job like that rolls in through there, and you're talking about a, can't remember what was it, but I mean, it's a huge job. It's five digit job, and but that rolls in through Thumbtack. So if you say, oh, I'm picking this call up, another, like, whatever, one room job.
Yeah, it's so important to answer the phone. I think that's a good point, Rick, that you're making right now, too, is, like, the reality is most of what we experience in the service industry is someone was a technician in the service industry and then grew into an entrepreneur. And their life is different now because now you're responsible for everything. Where before, you just had to go service whatever job you had come in and, you know, fill out your ticket and give it to the office or whatever you had to do. And life changes a little bit. And you're absolutely right. It's now work is my life. I wear branded stuff everywhere I go as well. I'm always on.
Yeah.
You go to these events, like Fun After Five can be a fun event, but you're still working. And if you continually do Fun After Five every day, it's still hard. And a lot of people don't recognize how difficult it is to be on the entrepreneurship side and to always be on, to always turn the game face on and shake hands and greet and interact. And some of that's fine and fun, and some of it's hard. And then you're at the end of a long week and you're just like, okay, I'm gassed. I need to just.
Well, I mean, yeah. Somebody told me it's Friday tomorrow. I'm like, what? No.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I don't even.
It's if crazy. That makes a difference.
Yeah, right. No, but I mean, excuse me. I look at my calendar all the time, right? I mean, look at it now. I just look at what's today, basically, and in the morning. And then it's still crazy because you don't really look at the days of the week anymore.
Yeah. I have? Okay, I've got this at noon. I got this at this time. I got this at this time. And
yeah,
try to make sure you pay attention to them.
Exactly. And so I think you really need to, if you want to get into entrepreneurship, people probably know if they are or not before they, and some people try it and then they find out they're not. But, you know, the typical entrepreneur person, right? I mean, I went through a college, got my master's degree in civil engineering and started working for the man. I mean, that was just my path. I have a friend from college who went through college, and then after he graduated, started his own company. Is miles ahead of any of the rest of us in personal wealth right now because it worked out for him.
Yeah.
I got a friend that started companies and is now on his, you know, whatever, 10th company, keeps trying something.
Yeah.
And those are the entrepreneurs, and some successful, some less successful. I guess I'm not a natural entrepreneur, but I'm not afraid of it. And I'm actually pretty good at it. I find out now, but you do need to be able and willing to, like you said, always be on. And the way I am on a personal level is if I am not constantly like in a state of being challenged, I start getting complacent about stuff. And this is a great way to do that. So,
yeah, for sure. What is something you've learned as an entrepreneur that you were completely unaware of?
That's a Cool question. You know what? I'll tell you something I'm surprised by. So during my my whole career, I've had these phases of stress, like bad stress, and it turns into physical problems, like being like getting really dizzy or something like that, and that's happened a few times throughout my career. And so when I stopped working for a big company and started this own company, you think your stress levels are going to go through the roof. In reality, my stress levels have actually been lowest they have been, because I've been able to oversee it and manage it, manage my own destiny, basically. And yes, it's scary. There's a lot of money that you're putting into it, a lot of risk. Anything that goes wrong is your personal loss. But I'm actually really thriving on having that kind of a responsibility towards myself. So that was a surprise to me, because I thought that was going to be, the stress was going to be like debilitating, but it's not. Yeah. Even though,
And yet you still did it anyway.
Yeah, I did.
Right. Believing that, in your head somewhere you thought, okay, this could wind up in a position where like physically it's overwhelming to me and my body shuts down on me. And yet you're like, okay, let's do it anyway. Partially because you kind of got pushed where you had to, right?
Yeah.
The thing you had ended.
We believe that, we joke about it, but it's something I believe in. And it's, we thought about it over the years and decade, and we should, it's also, the financial part, like taxes, for instance. If you're a dual high income earner with no, you're just paying taxes, right? And if you're an owner of a company and you're creating jobs for people and you're expanding on the economy, that gets rewarded tax wise. So for me, that was a huge motivator to for up a point. But the
just in terms of stress, right? Yeah,
yeah, the stress. Yeah, but and so it's I did it anyway. There were some pushes towards it, but then they're like, at the end of the day, I create my own destiny, right? I'm in charge of what would. How we built this company, if we built this company, and how successful it's going to be. And do I think I can do it? Yeah, I do. And my wife and I make an amazing team, and we're both all in. And even though she is still working full time, she's just, she does her part as much as she can. And we are, I'd say it's going really well. We haven't, we're not millionaires yet, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, sure. And I would say, Rick, from my perspective, is I would much rather my success or failure be dependent upon my activity, action, and my willingness to go to work, rather than, you can watch it in our country now, right? Like there are massive companies that have had major setbacks that resulted. Major auto manufacturers have had big issues that they've had too over the last 5 or 6 years. That they've had to lay people off, and these people thought they were set because they were working for one of these ginormous companies, big banks that have had to close or shut down a bunch of offices, airlines that have had trouble and struggles, where you look at those and you're like, these are massive companies. If they can have challenges, anybody can, but I don't want to just be rocking along doing my job and doing it well and suddenly be gone because something else imploded.
Yeah. Something you don't have influence on.
Correct.
Yep. Yeah. And that's the biggest thing. It's just, we're building something ourselves for ourselves and then impacting the lives of people positively. Because the way I approach it with the people that work for me is to I've learned enough about bad cultures to want to build a good culture.
Sure.
So this company is built on culture and the people wanting to build this company for themselves too. Because success equals a reward for them too.
Yeah, that's one of the big things we talk about regularly is culture and getting the right people in the right seats and having people that are all rowing in the same direction. That comes up in the podcast all the time. So it's definitely a theme associated with entrepreneurship and good companies, good entrepreneurs. There's been people I've had conversations with and I'm like, this dude, this is not a good person. Then he's had some success, but he's just not not my kind of people, right? So to piggyback off that last question, what is something you wish you knew or somebody would have told you before you pulled the trigger on entrepreneurship?
So even though I have a financial forecast plan and everything, it's insane how fast money flows away. And
cash flow is crazy.
And cash flow is king, and everybody says it, but you don't realize it until you live it.
Yeah.
And of course, that goes for personal life too. But, you know, you're in good earning jobs on a personal level, cash flow is manageable. But just the different stuff you pay money on. Now, the importance of marketing and networking is, if I could go back and tell myself something, this is what you need to do, is start earlier with. So we launched only back in February, and went, hit the ground running and started working the first week we had jobs. But if I could have told myself, because I knew this, we're going to do this, we created our LLC back in November, and we started talking to a few franchises, and we pulled the trigger on this one in November. We started our LLC in October, pulled trigger in November, and then you start working towards it with loans and whatnot. But so we knew we were going to do this back in November. If I would have became a member of the chamber and started networking back then, you're ahead 3-4 months.
Sure. Sure.
And so I just see now how valuable all that is, how valuable these connections and relationships are. And if I could go back, I would say, like, start that then. And if somebody said, can you come clean my office? No, I'm sorry, I can't do it until February.
Yeah. We're just getting prepared. We'll be open then. Yeah, sure.
Exactly. And I couldn't. And that's just my inexperience of being an entrepreneur. I guess it's just a rigid of, no, we're not starting anything until our opening day, you know? And we did turn on lead generators. And so that's why we had jobs from in the first week, but we could have been probably so much more busy right away.
Sure. And that's a great point though, in terms of other entrepreneurs. It's like, yeah, like it doesn't start when you open the doors necessarily. If you know you're going to do this in advance,
yeah,
get prepared, get set. Yeah. And even relationships that you've made prior to even being involved could be potential clients and things of that nature. So for sure. I can appreciate that.
Yeah. And I've talked greatly to peers, to other owners, Dakota owners, and some of them are previous entrepreneurs, owned a different business already, or they had owned a business and sold it and wanted to do something else. But those people understand, like, you need this.
Sure.
And so
there's
one guy I talked to in Toronto, he's opening in next month, and he's already having to say no to jobs. I'm like, man, that's great.
Yeah.
That's something that I can give any bit of advice. That's what you need.
Yeah. And even that you turn down is a potential lead for later. Right.
Yeah.
So keep that lead and navigate doing something with it.
Or try to book it for later. Like, hey, can't do it now, but in 2 months, what could you wear? I'll give you a good discount.
For sure.
I mean,
let's talk a little bit about, you know, you guys are running a franchise. What does the franchise do for you guys in regard to systems and processes that are super valuable to you, that somebody that's not going to do a franchise would experience, that could be problematic, I guess, essentially?
So one of the selling points for us choosing this franchise was the background of the leadership. So it's a group of guys that all have backgrounds in lead generation, franchising, and marketing. And so what part of my franchise fees are go to SEO, search engine optimization. That's not something you choose to opt out of or opt in of. That's they do that for you as part of the marketing package. And it's very impressive that from day one, we ranked high on Google and on search engines. And I talked to other people, and people that, you know, that asked me, like, how do you do it? Who are you using to get your name out there so well? And so that's something, because Google is obviously something that is like Greek to most people. And then on top of that, everybody wants you to pay them $1,000 to get you ranked top three in Google. And so I have the luxury of saying, I'm not interested. My franchise works on that. And there's 94 owners. So there's a global deal throughout the country. And so that works really well. what they also do is, and that's another thing that we're laughing about not too long ago, they say in at least the first year, you're using this company to do your bookkeeping. First thing is like, well, what am I, a child? I can do my own books. And their argument is, no, you're not going to, that's going to be the lowest on your priority list. And you're not going to have time to do it. And you're going to find out 6 months later that you're 6 months behind in your books. It's extremely important. Sure and is. So we have a company doing that. And so I have a bookkeeper that's doing it for me. I just have to tell her, this, what was this? What was that? So that takes me maybe an hour or two a month instead of, I don't know how long. And so that was really, that's really cool. That's just fun. It's a couple of the examples that they do. The support, they're also, the success coaches have a combined, 80 years of experience in restoration and cleaning. And so it's just a wealth of knowledge. I mean, you can literally pick up the phone or text or Teams or whatever and say, I've got this person has dropped a can of whatever paint. How do I clean that? Do I clean that? Somebody asked a question. I've got somebody, somebody that has a silk couch that they need cleaned. Should I do that? And the answer was no.
Yeah.
Respectfully.
No. I can try it, but sign here that I'm not liable if it turns completely different colors and disintegrates.
Well, and I've had people that wanted me to clean their silk rugs. I'm like, it's going to be, that's not going to be cheap. No, that's fine. And I just got a price from somebody that's specialized in it that takes a liability from me to him.
Yeah, sure.
And then mark that up and send it back. I'm like, I'm sorry. That's the only thing I can think of. And they're like, oh, that's a little bit. But I usually just tell people to go to this. There's a company in downtown Houston that does that stuff. So just do that. But
that's another great point, right? In terms of entrepreneurship is sometimes you don't have to do all of it, and you can potentially make a little bit of money in the middle of that, and or relationships with other people where it's like you're still calling me for me to send you to this other person that's going to take care of that for you, and making the phone ring is an important part of this.
Totally, and we've got a really good relationship with the mold inspector because in Texas, as you know, you can be inspector and remediator at the same time for good reasons. And so, I get a lot of calls like, "Hey, I need somebody to come and see this mold, test the mold for me," and I send everything to them, and they we'll do the inspections, create the reports and everything, and then send it back to me, and then I'll. And so those are great relationships that you have to build. Of course, in our industry, there's all sorts of, there's realtors, there's plumbers, there roofers, all sorts of people that if you build relationships with and they trust you, they'll send you to work.
Sure. Sure.
And those are mostly free leads.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's for sure. That's always a bonus for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, man, we're cresting at just over 40 minutes at this point. I know you got some things you got to get done. What's one last piece of advice that you would want to share with someone that's jumping into what you just went through? What would you want to share with them?
Well, depending on a lot of people that started a business are already excited about the business because they start the business for that reason, right? I think the biggest advice, and that's what I've ran into with even with people that are working for me, that they've tried. But they've failed because they haven't taken the time to run the business. So if you work for a contractor and you're like, well, I can do drywall and have people pay me directly instead of my boss, and you start a drywall company and you get your first job and you start doing drywall, perfect, great job, but you don't know how to bill them correctly, you don't know how to do your taxes correctly, your books, et cetera. You need to take the time if you're going to run a business, you got to run a business. I think that's why one of the reasons why we did this to Voda is kind of a winning way that if you focus on running your business and trust that there's people that can do the technical and the actual work for you. And not everybody has that luxury, but, partner up. Have maybe somebody's spouse can help them out with some of the admin stuff. But if you let that go, you're going to.
Sure. Absolutely right. That's spot on. I think that's great advice. And I appreciate you saying that because I think people fail to realize that in a lot of cases. And yeah, they go in and like, hey, I can do this work, and they do the work, and then they bill a little bit for their time, and then they're stuck trading time for money, and then they don't have money for their taxes later because the revenue was this. Exactly. They don't have documentation well of what they have done. because they're not real-time job costing or tracking their expenses or, you know, invoicing with markups correctly or any of that sort of thing, fail to pay taxes on their materials, and now they're going to get hit with an audit or whatever the case may be. Like, there's a lot to it. So that's great. That's great advice, Rick, man. And I certainly appreciate it. I appreciate you being on with me today. And it's been a great conversation. And I look forward to chatting with you more in the future.
Yeah, enjoyed it.
Thanks. Take care, Rick. Bye. Talk soon.